Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm Randy L. Noble, and thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to meet with me on the broadcast. Well, unfortunately, here in Florissant, where I live, winter is about to invade us this morning with about 1 inch of snow. Now, it's not really going to stick because the temperature is too warm for it, but it's just the idea that we are going to be hit with snow. I do not like winter. But I want to start the broadcast off this morning with some very good news. If you've been following The Cross in the Desert and you're on my Facebook page, you've seen the numerous posts about Iranian Queen Behera Bahari. She has now officially been granted refugee status in the Philippines. Now, she's lived in the Philippines before, but remember, she was stopped at the airport by an Iranian Red Interpol report that accused her of doing some kind of physical harm to another Iranian. It was a fake report. It was a lie, and they were trying their best to get Behera deported back to Iran. But now lawyers have finally intervened after 3 or more weeks and have reviewed the case for Behera, have rejected the Iranian Interpol message accusation, and have granted her refugee status, which means, good news, she cannot be deported back. But there is some not so good news. She's still at the airport, and she wants to have an armed security guard with her all the time. She's very afraid, since this Interpol report, of something being done to her by Iranians. You know, they do this abroad. They attack refugees, and she's very afraid, but she hasn't gotten that request permitted, so she's still there at the airport. But good news, she has refugee status. And so I wanted to begin the broadcast today with some good news. Also, going from good news to some bad news, our good friend Golrak Ayari, which is the wife of Arash Sadjusi, has been rearrested and returned to Evin prison. She had been out since April, yet she did some interviews critical of the government, and because they monitor you so much there, she was rearrested. This morning, what I want to do is I want to focus in on Golrak's husband, Arash Sadjusi. He is in very serious, grave condition. He has been suffering with a type of cancer. While he did have surgery, the government has not been gracious at all to him about follow-up treatment or any care. And so what happened as a result of Arash Sadjusi's situation in his imprisonment in Iran, 150 civil rights activists have gotten together with the families of other political prisoners, and they have written a letter to the government and to all human rights groups all over the world demanding Arash's immediate transfer to the hospital. Arash has been held in Rajiv Shahar prison and prison officials refused to transfer him to the hospital for chemo and radiation treatment despite medical team's recommendation. With cancer, you cannot just have some type of surgery. He needs ongoing treatment, ongoing chemo. Glorock has tweeted, despite our overwhelming patience, prosecutors and judicial officers continue to oppose Arash's release to the hospital. This while Arash's life is in danger. Disabled, increased infections and scans are not performed to ensure that the tumor does not reoccur. He really needs this kind of medical attention. So HRANA, the Independent Iranian Human Rights Activist News Agency, has published a full transcript of the letter along with the names of the signatories. Now, I want to read this letter to you. It's so well written. 1 year after Arash's surgery and more than 2 years after the onset of the disease, he continues to be denied access to specialized treatment and deprived of treatment that is his basic rights as a prisoner. Disregard for the treatment has caused Arash's infection to worsen. His right arm has swollen, numb, and immobilized from the shoulder to the fingertips. He has been using oral antibiotics continuously for the past year, but this type of treatment is insufficient due to the high rate of infection and chronic illness, increasing the incidence and severity of the illness, making the treatment impossible, hence diminishing his chance of recovery. This incident began when security agents returned him to prison without regard for the medical team's opinion that he should remain in the hospital. Since then, the surgical wound has infected and is worsening by the day. The doctor prescribed chemotherapy, which was refused and prevented by the authorities. Also, because of suspicion of tumor reoccurrence in other parts of his body, his physician required him to perform a full scan of the entire body. This scan should be performed every 4 months. Short of treatment, the scan failed and the treatment was stopped. The right hand was disabled and the body no longer reacted to the antibiotic and was weak and lethargic due to drug side effects. We, a group of activists and families of political prisoners, hereby express our concern about the deterioration of Arash Sataji's condition and call for immediate medical condition and attention. Obviously, our objection to the loss of Arash's health and his being in a dangerous situation at any moment can lead to an irreparable situation. Therefore, we would like to take the necessary steps to dispatch Arash's treatment without delay and formalities in carrying through the complete recovery process. The responsibility of Arash Sataji's life lies with the prison authority, the judicial authorities, the prosecution, and the judiciary. This is horrible, but these dedicated Iranian human rights activists, families of the prisoners, have all signed this letter. And they are really making an appeal. This is what's called in Iran and in the prison silent treatment. You are imprisoned for a certain charge. Arash is a human rights activist. He's in prison because of his activities. And they refuse medical treatment to you so that you end up dying in your incarceration. Now, I want to just make mention of this letter. You can see it on my Facebook page. Let's join these activists. Let's continue to pray to speak out for Arash. Let's let the Iranian government know in our human rights activities that we refuse to be silent, that we expect them to do their duty to prisoners who are suffering, and to allow him to have chemotherapy treatment and to do as the doctors suggested. This is horrendous, and it should be stopped immediately, and they should respond to this letter. This is inhumane, and every human rights activist all over the world would agree with us that this is inhumane. So let's continue to be a voice for Arash, continue to bombard the internet, and continue to email the Iranian government and tell them that this is unacceptable. And let's continue to be his voice. I want to take some time this morning to focus in on the situation of Iranian refugees in Turkey. In our new book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, I will be writing a special section about the treatment of Iranian refugees in Turkey. This morning, I want to go to an internet publication known as Article 18, and I want to spend some time reading this important article to you. It's so well written, it's very informative, and there's a picture on my Facebook link to the radio of this beautiful Iranian couple with their child there. They are Christians, and I want to share with you their story. I have many Iranian friends in Turkey that are refugees. One is named Gila. The other is Elham. Elham, thank God, is going to be leaving sometime soon. A church in Canada has sponsored her and her family, but she has been in Turkey up until now for over 4 years. This couple has been there 6 years. Miriam Batnia and her husband Reza Mosavi fled Iran because Miriam faced a 1-year jail sentence for her involvement in house churches, and they all sought asylum in Turkey, and there they remain, tired, fearful, and devoid of hope. In these 6 years, Miriam, who's now 37, Reza, who's 39, and their 8-year-old son, Daniel, have been threatened with deportation, rejected for resettlement in the U.S., and have had to travel long distances every 2 weeks to sign at a police station to prove that they are really living in a registered city, except that they aren't, because they can't. 8 months after their arrival, the couple was designated Samsun, a city on Turkish northern coast, as their city of residence. But they had already settled in Istanbul. They had found a church. Reza had found a job, but unable to find a new job in Samsun, and with no money in the bank, they decided to stay in Istanbul, even though Samsun was a 12-hour drive away. So you understand their situation. But a year later, with Reza snowed under at his work in the tourism industry at the time of the Persian New Year, the couple missed 3 consecutive signings at the police station in Samsun, and the next time they went, they discovered that they had been served a deportation order. "We were so frightened," Miriam recalls. "It was 2 days after this order that we were called by the UN staff. And usually when they call you to have an interpreter, but that day, a Turkish woman called, spoke to my husband, and said, quote, tomorrow, 8 o'clock, you need to be here at the UN office. And she was really serious, and they were frightened to death. We thought, this is for our deportation. The police had informed them, and now they have summoned us to deport us. In fact, what had happened, the UN had called to tell them that they had actually been successful with their application to register as refugees. To their relief, they found out that this meant they were exempt from any deportation order. Good news. But their joy at the good news was only temporary. 1 year later, in March 2016 of that year, the U.S. rejected their asylum claim. And it was right at a time when they were blocking entry for new refugees to Europe and the U.S., Reza recalled. And from what others who have gone or before us have said about how they were treated, it was completely different from our experience. Not only was this beautiful couple unfortunately rejected, they were also advised at that time by U.S. officials not to bother appealing the decision, as they only had a 1 in 99 chance of success. And so they were back to square one. A year later, they successfully applied for their designated city to be reassigned to a church much closer to Istanbul. but still one in which Reza had found it difficult to find work. And still, every 2 weeks, there is the process of trekking back and forth to the police station to sign in. And Reza just complains how uncomfortable this experience is. Here's what's happening. The interviewer is a Muslim, and she's not really particularly sympathetic to their situation. He says, their main question is, okay, why did you convert from Islam to Christianity? And Reza says, I have to explain this. And another question is, what was wrong with Islam that you converted? Which Reza says puts us in a really difficult situation. We have to talk negatively about the faith. And this interviewer, remember, is a Muslim. Now, for Miriam, the greatest challenge is the waiting. We just want to really leave Turkey. It's been way too long a wait. Reza is the most time he spends is at work, and it's really hard work for us to live here. An additional complication is the fact that asylum seekers in Turkey aren't even legally permitted to work. But Miriam says it is otherwise impossible for them to meet their needs. So although legally they aren't allowed, they still do. But, you know, the government can step in and cancel that at any time. We are torn between abiding by the law or meeting our basic needs, she says. In other countries, refugees have support systems. They receive housing. They receive work opportunities. But here we're denied those, and we're sent to cities where we can't meet the basic standards of living. Reza says, for us who fled persecution, we fled without organizing a plan. We didn't have savings to take with us that we could carry on spending for a couple of years. We didn't have any plan for learning the language or the work or anything like that. And you remember, they had to leave because otherwise Miriam would go to prison because of her house church involvement. So we got here. We found ourselves in the middle of all of this refugee process. The Turkish government, UN, any of those authorities do not financially help us in any way at all. I had to actually sign in my first interview a document saying that I do not have any claim on receiving help or support, so they're forced to sign this document. They don't offer you any accommodation, anywhere to sleep. Even when you want to rent a house, it will be even more expensive for you than a Turkish resident. So all this shows you the basic financial needs asylum seekers have, and they're all denied them. In small cities, any jobs you may be able to find are very hard labor, and then you'll be lucky if you will be paid for the work that you do, Reza explains. I have a slipped disc, and I can't do heavy physical labor. That's personal for me, but maybe others are in a similar situation. Reza says he has no grievance with either the Turkish or American governments, but wishes there was consistency in the application process. We know that there are people around us who have asylum cases based on false claims. So I can understand that they would see me as somebody similar to them. But, he says, what I would expect, and I think it is reasonable, is they would have an expert look at our cases to discern the genuine cases of persecution of Christians and those that are just trying to commit to Christianity in order to escape deportation. That's false. Reza adds that he would like to see a better support network for persecuted Christians, similar to the LGBT community and Baha'is, who are also persecuted minorities in Iran. There is no support system for the family, especially for those in children with children, like Miriam explained. You know, we and are a lot of those who are fleeing persecution in Iran, they have their own lives and likelihood. They may have been doing well meeting their own needs back in their own home country. Now that they have come here, and in addition to enduring all the hardship, they feel responsible for what has happened to their children. So somebody like our child comes, and now he's at an age that he understands why we are here and what circumstances led to our escape from Iran, and he questions what would happen if we weren't arrested. Would we be in a similar situation or not? So I'm not expecting any kind of financial help, Miriam says, but at least something to facilitate a support for these families so that this period of waiting should be shortened for them, or at least somebody to hear them out and understand what they're going through. For now, Miriam and Reza sit and wait in hope that another country, perhaps Canada or Australia, will take on their case. But until that time, all they can do is wait. With no idea of how long it will take, it's been 6 years. For us, the timing itself is not the issue, Reza says. We've been here for too long, but at least if we knew the direction we were heading in, then we could manage the time. My heart goes out to this precious Iranian couple. I know because I have a friend named Elham who has waited over 4 years and is finally seeing hope at the end of the rainbow. My other friend Jila, she is attending university and she works maybe 14 hours a day, gets paid very little. And she too is suffering, waiting, not knowing the direction. And as I was thinking about Arash this morning and thinking about Reza and Miriam and Jila and Elham, I came across a wonderful psalm, Psalm number 10. It's about the cry of the oppressed. How do we say to God in our own way what's going on in our lives? Well, the psalmist here says it for us. And I want to pray and cry out and lament to our God about Arash, about my Iranian refugee friends, about Reza and Miriam, about Jila and Elham. This is Psalm 10. It is the cry of the oppressed. Lord, you seem so far away when evil is near. Why do you stand so far off as though you didn't care? Why have you hidden yourself when I need you the most? The arrogant in their elitist pride persecute the poor and helpless. May you pour out upon them the very evil that they've planned against others. How they brag and boast of their cravings, exalting the greedy. They congratulate themselves as they despise you. These arrogant ones, so smug and secure in their delusion, the wicked boast, God doesn't care about what we do. There's nothing to worry about. Our wealth will last a lifetime. So seemingly successful are they in their schemes, prosperous in all their plans, and scoffing at any restraint. They boast that neither God nor man will bring them down. They sneer at all their enemies, saying in their hearts, "We'll have success in all we do and never have to face trouble." Never realize that they are speaking this in vain. Their mouths spout out cursing, lies, and threats. Only trouble and turmoil come from all their plans. Like beasts lurking in the shadows of the city, they crouch silently in ambush for the people to pass by. Pouncing on the poor, they catch them in their snare to murder their prey in secret as they plunder their helpless victims. They crush the lowly as they fall beneath their brutal blows, watching their victims collapse in defeat. Then they say to themselves, "The lofty one is not watching while we do this. He doesn't even care. We can get away with it." Now is the time to arise, Lord. Crush them once and for all. Don't forget the forgotten and the helpless. How dare the wicked think they'll escape judgment, believing that you would not call them to account for all their ways. Don't let the wicked get away with their contempt of you. Lord, I know you see all that they are doing, noting their each and every deed. You know the trouble and turmoil they've caused. Now punish them thoroughly for all that they've done. The poor and helpless ones trust in you, Lord, for you are famous for being the helper of the fatherless. I know you won't let them down. Break the power of the wicked and all their strong-arm tactics. Search them out and destroy them for the evil things they've done. You, Lord, are king forever and ever. You will see to it that all the nations perish from your land. Lord, you know and understand all the hopes of the humble, and will hear their cries and comfort their hearts, helping them all. The orphans and the oppressed will be terrified no longer, for you will bring them justice, and no one will trouble them. An amazing cry of lament. And this comes from the psalmist who understood the pain of living in captivity. David was running from King Saul. King Saul was oppressing him, and he understood how enemies felt like they could triumph over them. But David also wrote something very beautiful, not as a cry of a lament, but in Psalm 37, he says something very trusting in God. Do not fret because of evil men, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of the heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. So David also writes in trust of the Lord. And I write this and speak this and pray this for my dear Iranian friends. Bahari, Arash, Sadaji, Gorak, Ayari, Reza, and Miriam, and Daniel, stranded in Turkey. And this morning I'm also remembering Elham, remembering Gila. I'm remembering all of my refugee friends all over the Middle East that are struggling, that are waiting, that are hungry for a homeland. My dear friend Paymane, who is stranded in Malaysia, I'm thinking of her this morning. And as I recited and prayed Psalm 10, I thought of her and thought of all of them. Please join me in crying out to God, as the psalmist did in Psalm 10, for these precious friends of mine. They're your friends too. Please be their voice. Please pray for them. The prayers of a righteous man avail much power, the Bible promises. The prayers of just one righteous person avails much power. The Iranian people are suffering. They are depending on those that will stand with them, those that will pray for them and never relent, never give up. I have seen so many amazing answers to prayer for my Iranian friends. And this morning I'm thinking of also Sholeh and Shahzad in Germany, while her husband and the rest of her family are stranded in Iran, their passports seized by the government. I continue to pray for all of them. Please join me in praying for them this morning. Be a voice for the voiceless. God bless you. Thank you for listening to the program this morning. I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert.